that I think is really relevant to our class. And so we had a little munchkin come in yesterday, a little kiddo, with cerebral palsy. And I'm gonna try not to cry. The birth was very traumatic, and this poor little kid, her head is all misshapen because they had to use a lot of intervention to get this little girl out. And when you see it, like, this is not her, this is just someone off the internet I'm pulling up. But when a child has cerebral palsy, a little infant has cerebral palsy, there's sort of a facial expression or a facial countenance that they generally tend to have. It's not genetic, you know, like trisomy 21 or Down a syndrome has a very characteristic, you know, face with their eyes, you know, and the nose, the bridge of the slant of their between their eyes and stuff. I also notice this with kids with cerebral palsy. There's a kind of a look that happens on their face when they're unable to control their muscles with ease the way a neurotypical child can. And so when I was scrolling on the internet, this little one here has, this is the kind of the look that she has. Sort of like the mouth is kind of like open like this, and the posture is kind of down, and the eyes are kind of sagging a little bit. It almost looks like she's like always tired, if you can imagine, with their mouths open. It's very, very typical of this sort of thing. But one of the things that happens with kiddos like this is this. Yeah, once again, it's not a picture of her, I just scrolled on the internet. Is she arches her back a lot. And, you know, constantly doing this. Almost like you ever see like someone on a rodeo, like, you know, like riding a bull, you know, and they're kind of going like this with holding their hat, whatever. It kind of looks like that. It's that sort of motion, like this. And what that is the body is in such, there's such tension within the spine and the spinal cord and the brain and nerve system that the body is trying to do this to release tension. It's like a tension relieving kind of thing. So when we look at a little girl like this, or a little boy that has cerebral palsy, this is the kind of thing that I like. I told the parents, I said, and if you heard me in class this morning, you heard me say this, but Dr. Sid, who founded this university, used to always say, bring me your most difficult cases. And this is the kind of case I'd love to see. I'm heartbroken, right? I'm heartbroken to see and to hear what has transpired with this little one to get her to this place. But I'm so happy that she's in my office because I know that her life is going to change. I know that her life is going to change because what we're going to do with this little one is something that nobody else is going to do. And that's where we're going to adjust her, and we're going to get her nerve system working as good as it can within the limitations of matter that have restricted it, right? And the reason that I know this with conviction is because I've seen it time and time and time again. I've seen kids who've come in with unbelievable issues. And if you need to close the door, go ahead. Just don't close it all the way because it's locked for some reason. So I've seen it time and time again with kiddos who've come into the practice and have had devastating birth trauma. And we mentioned this in lab. Someone had asked me a question about birth trauma. And devastating birth trauma. And one of two things can happen. And I'm just gonna give you a description. So this is 2 years ago. Within 1 week, we had two little kids. Both came in with cerebral palsy. Both had very, very, very traumatic births. But both had extremely different outcomes over the next 3 to 6 months when I saw them. So the first munchkin, the first one was, he was a bit worse off to begin with. But the first one was also doing this arching kind of thing, also has some kind of seizures. But the parents, and God bless them, you know, I have no judgment, I have a very judgment-free office, but the parents did not follow pretty much anything that I recommended. They didn't come on the frequency I told them. They didn't do the exercise I told them at home. Yeah, I'm too busy, we have too much stuff going on, all these excuses and stuff. So after 3 months or so, there was some mild improvement, but not a whole lot. Other kid, very similar circumstance, not as severe, but still very bad, arching kind of stuff like this and all kinds of issues going on. This family, they did the things that I told them to do. They did come 2 or 3 times a week, every week, like I told them to. They did do the exercises. And at this child's 6-month checkup from her pediatrician, the pediatrician said, I don't know what you're doing, but this child hardly is showing any signs of cerebral palsy anymore. That's the chiropractic difference. That's what I want to teach you. I want to teach you what I've been doing for the last 33 years. I want to teach you the stuff that Larry Webster, the founder of the ICPA, taught me. I want to impart this knowledge on you because you are the future. You're the future. You're the ones that, you've heard this thing? You're the ones they've been waiting for. You are the ones they've been waiting for. And the way to train is to train now. And the way to train is for you to take classes like this and take ICPA classes and any other pediatric classes you can get, like Melillo. If you take my morning class, you know about Dr. Melillo. You gotta take Melillo's work. You've got to know chiropractic pediatrics, which is different than regular chiropractic, and you need to know neurology. If you're gonna go into pediatrics, you gotta know neurology, because the stuff that you're gonna see now in today's world is not the stuff that when you guys were kids, what you saw. Because you guys probably were all born in the 90s, I'd imagine something in that range. So in the 90s, the autism rate was like 1 in 5,000. Now the autism rate is 1 in 36. So the amount of kids that I see, 50%, 60% of my practice is kids. 50% of that percent are kids on the spectrum, and 50% of those are minimally speaking. So you gotta be ready for this, because these kids are not the same. And I'm not talking about not the same in terms of, well, they're a little different, you know, whatever. I'm talking about their brains and nerve systems do not respond the way a neurotypical kid brain and nerve system does. You can't do the same things you do on any child, on XYZ child. You can't do the same things and expect the same results without understanding what's happening to their brain and nerve system. Without understanding, like with a kid like this, is it a child who's constantly going back like this, are you gonna adjust them the same way if they're kind of stuck in a certain kind of extension and lateral flexion? No, you have to think about that. You have to take that into account. You know, most people that most chiropractors work on are relatively neurotypical adults and children, so that their spine and nerve system is kind of like the same. But when you're dealing with all these kids on the spectrum, you're dealing with all these kids with deletion and duplication syndromes, you're dealing with all these kids who have neurological challenges with ADHD or learning disorders or sensory processing disorders or genetic abnormalities or something going on like cerebral palsy, etc. You've got to really understand what their differences are and how to approach those differences. And it's not the same. So I'm super glad that you are here, because this is our next step. This is the next step to me in the evolution of chiropractic, is brain-based chiropractic. Most chiropractic, and this is not a put down or a negative or a judgment, but most chiropractic is bone-based. I am not a bone-based chiropractor. I am a brain-based chiropractor. I check brains and nerve systems. The spine is the conduit. The spine is the entry in, but it is not what I do and who I am. I am not a back doctor. I am not a bone doctor. I may touch the back, I may touch the bones, but that's not what I do or who I am. My why is the nerve system. That's my why. And I'm not saying it should be your why. Whatever why you want is totally fine. But if you're going to be taking care of kids, and a lot of these kids that you're going to see are going to be on the spectrum, you better understand that nerve system. You better understand that the brain and nerve system are functioning differently, that their input and their output are not the same. So when you tell a child, as an example, we do some activator in my office. So if you tell a child, put your hand on their back like this, that's a giant step. Like, I could tell anyone of you that put your hand on your back like this to do an L5, check for activator, and that's not that hard of a stretch to ask you to do that. You might say, you might do the wrong side or something, some people do that, but I want you to realize how giant a step it is for you to have, and I told this to one of our moms yesterday, I've been seeing her kiddo on the spectrum for about 6 months now, and I said, she just started using the activator protocol with her where she can understand, and I put your hand on her head and she actually can do it. I said, do you know how big this is? Do you know what a monumental sign this means? How her brain is now understanding? So if I say, tap here and say, put this hand on your head and she can do that, that's big. That's big. That's prefrontal cortex is understanding this, sending information down to the thalamus and basal ganglia, saying through the cerebellum, coordinated effort like this, saying you have to move this arm because this Dr. Rubin touched this leg, so you have to move this arm and you have to touch your head, and you have to don't overshoot it or undershoot it or go like this. You have to do that's giant. And we need to understand that, that we cannot have expectations with these kids that they can just do what any other kid can. Now they are able, right? We can't underestimate them, but we have to understand that for these kids, we have to give them time. So someone asked in the lab earlier, they said, how do you adjust these kids who are squirmy and non-cooperative, etc.? And the answer is wherever they are. So just because you have a chiropractic bench in your office doesn't mean they need to be adjusted on that bench, face down. You adjust them wherever they want to be in the beginning. When they're ready to lie down, they'll lie down. When their nervous system understands lying down is safe, they'll lie down. Do you know how unsafe lying down really is? Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought about how vulnerable it is for you to go face down? Does any animal in the wild ever turn its back to someone that they think is a predator? Right? Never. Right? So for someone to do this and to lie face down and to be completely and totally 100% vulnerable, that's huge. These kids don't get that because they're in fear mode all the time. And you need to understand that. And I hear all the time about patients saying, we went to this other chiropractor and someone said to hold the kid's foot over here and I'll hold their head over here and you got to do what you got to do. I'm like, and how was that child the next time they came to the office? Right? That doesn't work. You have to create, as I mentioned in the other class, you have to create safety. We have to create a safe space. So that's what I tell all our patients is we're going to create a safe space for your child where they do not feel threatened, that they're not going to be put in positions they don't want to be put in, that we're not going to do things to them that they don't want to have done. And that's how we approach these kids, is we have to understand that when a child's nerve system is misfiring like this, we have to take that into account and say, where is this child? And then what do we have to do to get to reach this child's nervous system? And here's the biggest thing. See, if you're in a traditional kind of practice, what I have found over the years is most people are in sort of a rush. They're in a rush to get stuff done because they're running on the insurance clock. We got 10 visits to make something happen. Well, good luck in making something happen in 10 visits with a kid on the spectrum who's minimally speaking. Good luck with that, right? As I mentioned in my class this morning, my care plan, my typical care plan for a child on the spectrum, just to start, beginning one, day one, like when I saw yesterday, another kiddo on the spectrum, minimum 6 months to a year, minimum. 6 months to a year, two times a week. Insurance will not pay for that. That's why I don't do insurance. Not that insurance is wrong, but I don't do insurance because insurance will not pay for the care that I know that that child needs. So our recommendations are not based upon their recommendations from the insurance company. Our recommendations are based on what does the child need? I know how long it's going to take. It takes frequency, intensity, duration to make this kid work. It's going to take a lot of adjustments and a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of effort on my part and on your part. And that's going to take time, and we're not going to rush it. I refuse to rush it. So that's a very different perspective. And that's the perspective I want to share with you guys. Is there's a different way to think about pediatric care. You have to think about the care plan is going to be different. You have to think about the adjustments are going to be different. You have to think about how you approach the adjustment different. You have to think about the communication with the parents and the kids is going to be different to make sure you're getting the result that you want. And that's what I want to do with you guys this quarter, is really introduce you to that concept.